Today on WikiNews, suspected serial killer Stephen Griffiths appears in a British court. Maoist rebels are suspected in a deadly train derailment in India. The U.S. Air Force breaks a record for hypersonic flight.
It's a fairly complicated test. The altitude is right at the very top of B-52 capabilities. We also have chase, so they have to be there as well. The telemetry has to be relayed from Naval Station Point Magoo. We have to have a control room with about 35 people all watching the various telemetry. So there's a lot of teamwork aspects to this whole project.
And in history, a solar eclipse ends an ancient war near modern-day Turkey. Today is Friday, May 28th, 2010. I'm Dan Harlow, and this is WikiNews. A man accused of being a serial killer has appeared in the Bradford Magistrates Court in West Yorkshire today, charged with 3 counts of murder. 40-year-old Stephen Griffiths is accused of killing 3 prostitutes, Susan Blaymeyers, Susan Rushworth, and Shelley Armitage. Griffiths, a former van driver with a degree in psychology and studying for a PhD in criminology, gave his name as Crossbow Cannibal when asked. He had been in police custody since Monday when police were alerted to a closed-circuit television recording that appeared to show a murder. A caretaker had been reviewing footage from the flats where Griffiths lives when he saw the footage of a woman and a man enter a flat early on Saturday morning. 2 minutes later, she ran out and was followed by the man, who beat her to the ground and shot her in the head with a crossbow. Over the course of the weekend, the man was seen several times with bin bags and rucksacks. On Tuesday, the day after the arrest of Griffiths, Blaymeyers' remains were found in the River Eyre in nearby Shipley. She had been cut into several pieces and her head was located in a rucksack. Police continue to search for the other 2 alleged victims. Rushworth has been missing since June of last year, and Armitage vanished in April. Police have searched much of Bradford's red light district, where Griffith's third floor flat is also located. Forensic investigators at the flat are expected to last around 3 weeks. There are plans to search landfill sites for bodies, and police may yet expand the inquiry to cover 3 more cold cases, although at present they have not been linked to the current inquiry. Griffiths was known as the Lizard Man in his block of flats, owing to his habit of walking his 2 pet monitor lizards in the area. One neighbor is reported to have quoted him as saying that he was studying for a PhD in murder and Jack the Ripper, and he had spent time in a high-security psychiatric hospital. During his 5-minute court appearance, he did not enter a plea, kept his head bowed, and fidgeted with his cuffed hands. He said, "Here, I guess," when asked for his address. As he stood in court, guarded by 3 security officers, he was watched by the families of Rushworth and Armitage, who were accompanied by police family liaison officers. Blaymeyers' family chose not to be present, but the victim's mother, Nikki Blaymeyers, has told the press that Suzanne was a much-loved family member, even though she went down the wrong path and did not have the life she was meant to have. "Nobody deserves this," she said. "All these girls were human beings and people's daughters." Griffith's morning court appearance was followed by a second one this afternoon at Bradford Crown Court. This time, he confirmed his name without incident. He was remanded into custody until next month, when he will appear in court again. British media have been quick to compare the case to Peter Sutcliffe, who was dubbed the Yorkshire Ripper. Sutcliffe was a Bradford killer responsible for 13 murders and 7 attempted murders, including several prostitutes. Since his 1981 conviction, he has spent most of the last 3 decades in a Broadmoor high-security psychiatric hospital near London. While the UK attempts to cope with the aftermath of the serial killings, violence also broke out in India as at least 65 people were killed and over 200 injured when suspected Maoist rebels triggered an attack on an express train in West Bengal, derailing it near the city of Sardia. The incident occurred at around 1:30 a.m. local time, but police forces and local medics took an hour to reach the site. Lack of roads and the fear of an ambush by Maoists slowed rescue operations, as the region is a Maoist stronghold where multiple attacks have occurred in the recent past. Air Force helicopters managed to arrive on scene at dawn, as local television footage showed onlookers standing on top of the affected carriages as soldiers cut holes in the roofs with a gas-powered circular saw. A doctor at a nearby hospital noted 30 bodies had been taken to the hospital, but, quote, "a lot of the dead bodies are strewn under the derailed carriages." Home Secretary of State Samar Ghosh said 65 bodies had been found so far. The exact cause of the disaster was unclear, with some officials claiming there was an explosion, while some unaffected passengers stated they heard no blast. The driver, however, said he had heard an explosion in the attack, which derailed as many as 10 passenger coaches, 5 of which were subsequently struck by a freight train coming in the opposite direction. Police officials, including the head of police of the state, said the metallic parts which held sections of the rail track together were missing, and he labeled this as an act of sabotage. Maoist leaflets were also found at the scene. According to the country's railway minister, there was definitely sabotage, and a bomb blast had led to the derailment. The minister also announced a compensation of $11,000 and a job in her ministry for the families of the dead, and $2,200 for those wounded. The Maoist guerrillas are known as Naxalites and are a powerful force in the relatively poorer states of India. In the past few years, poor or landless peasants and tribesmen have rendered their support towards the insurgents due to the wealth gap and as a result of the former losing their land to government-aided mining companies. As citizens in India react angrily to the growing economic divide in that nation, workers in Taiwan are also feeling pressured, as Taiwan electronics giant Foxconn has moved to repair its reputation after the suicide of a 10th employee this year. This latest death came on the same day as Terry Gao, chairman of Foxconn's parent Hanhai Precision, opened the Shenzhen production facility to the media for the first time. In the face of accusations that he ran a modern-day sweatshop, he showed off employee recreation facilities. Gao, bowing as an expression of regret, promised to work to prevent such tragedies from occurring again. Although not a household name, Foxconn is the largest producer of electronics components and badge-engineered electronics products in the world. Badge engineering is the replacement of the branding trademark of one product for another. Foxconn manufactures products for companies like Intel, Hewlett-Packard, and Apple. Labor activists have criticized conditions at Foxconn's factories as military-style, with workers working long shifts and not being able to speak to each other. However, Foxconn claims that the suicides were mostly the result of relationship problems unrelated to its management style, and it urges that for a workforce so large, the number of suicides is small. The United Kingdom's Conservative Party has won the last seat of the 2010 general election, taking the seat of Thurscan Malton with a majority of over 11,000. Voting in the constituency had been delayed by the death of the UK Independence Party candidate in the run-up to the original polling date of May 6th. The new Member of Parliament, Anne McIntosh, took over 52% of the vote, with the Liberal Democrats, partners with the Conservative and the coalition government, coming in second place. Despite the relationship between the parties and government, the Liberal Democrat candidate, Howard Keel, had promised that there would be a full-on fight for the seat. The Labour Party came in third, although the fall in its share of the vote was described by political opponents as catastrophic for the party. This was the first election held for the constituency, which was formed from parts of the two former Conservative-held seats. The Conservatives' share of the vote rose by 0.2%, with the Liberal Democrats up 5% and the Labour Party down 11.6%. McIntosh, formerly a Member of Parliament for the Vale of York constituency, said that she was delighted adding that it was a very exciting time in politics. In a victory that's just as sweet, earlier today, California state senators voted 21 in favor and 11 against the prohibition of sales of sugared sports drinks at public schools during class hours. Soft drinks are already banned during school hours. Studies have shown that sweetened drinks contribute to obesity among adults and children, leading to diseases like diabetes. According to Senator Alex Padilla, quote, sugar-sweetened electrolyte replacement beverages are still available and have surged in popularity among kids. He added that the bill is a common-sense step forward in the effort to address the obesity epidemic in California. Governor Schwarzenegger is also sponsoring a package of legislation aimed at reducing child obesity in California, and today's bill will now move to the State Assembly for further legislation. However, not all political victories have been without controversy, as U.S. Representative Joe Sestak, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, says that he was offered a job in the Obama administration if he would drop out of a Senate primary election. Obama told journalists in a news conference that an official report on the allegations will be released shortly. Sestak made the allegations first in February. Media attention then grew, however, only when he defeated Arlen Specter, the incumbent senator and White House preferred candidate in the Senate primary last week. Since then, there has been more pressure on the Obama administration to reveal what they discussed with Sestak. Republican leaders have asked the Attorney General's office to review the legal implications of this job offer, but the Justice Department has rejected other requests to investigate or appoint a special prosecutor. Charges of corruption are not limited to the political realm today, as the men's basketball program at the University of Connecticut has been cited by the National Collegiate Athletic Association for 8 major violations of its recruiting policy. These allegations have resulted in the resignation of 2 of the team's assistant coaches, Bo Archibald and Patrick Sellers. Head coach Jim Calhoun is also accused by the NCAA of not monitoring the activities of his assistant coaches closely enough, which they said led to the rules violations. These citations come after the NCAA's 15-month-long investigation relating to the team's possible recruiting violations of Nate Miles, who was set to play for the team during the 2007-08 season until he was expelled from the school for a restraining order violation. Sellers and Archibald are accused of placing 160 unauthorized phone calls and sending 191 unauthorized text messages to recruits who had not yet committed to play for the team, which is a violation of NCAA rules because teams are only allowed to place a certain amount of phone calls to recruits. Former coach Archibald also allegedly placed an unauthorized phone call that lasted approximately 29 minutes. However, the player's name was kept anonymous and withheld from the report. The investigation also reports that the 2 accused assistant coaches gave improper and false information when NCAA investigators interviewed the 2 about the situation. Calhoun, aged 68, has been the coach of UConn for the past 28 years and has already been enshrined in the College Basketball Hall of Fame, as well as recently signing a $13 million contract extension with UConn. Quote, "It's not exactly, certainly anywhere near the high point of my career," Calhoun said in a statement. "As a matter of fact, it's certainly one of the lowest points at any time that you are accused of doing something. It's a very serious matter." UConn has been scheduled to appear in front of NCAA investigators on October 18th for sanctioning and further investigation. It is likely that the basketball program could lose scholarships and receive probation. U.S. actor Gary Coleman has died at the Utah Valley Regional Medical Center in Provo, Utah, after complications from a brain hemorrhage. Coleman was admitted to the hospital on May 26th after falling and injuring his head, and then went into a coma on May 27th, requiring life support. He was taken off life support and died shortly after noon on Friday. Coleman had been suffering multiple medical problems throughout his life. However, it is unknown if these problems affected his death. He suffered from a congenital kidney disease, which required 2 transplants and daily dialysis. On February 27th of this year, Coleman suffered a seizure on the set of a television show called The Insider. Coleman's career began with appearances on the U.S. sitcoms The Jeffersons and Good Times, but he was best known for his reoccurring role as Arnold Jackson on Different Strokes and his reoccurring line, "What you talk about, Willis?" Coleman was 42 years old. Finally, the experimental Boeing X-51A Waverider scramjet managed to break a hypersonic flight record Wednesday during a test flight. The United States Air Force said that the scramjet was able to fly for 200 seconds, achieving a top speed of around Mach 5 and setting a new record for what the Air Force called the longest supersonic combustion ramjet-powered hypersonic flight. The previous record of 12 seconds was set by the NASA X-43 in 2004. This hypersonic flight, also the first to use a hydrocarbon fuel, was hailed by U.S. government officials as a success. Despite an unknown failure which caused the X-51 to lose acceleration, an X-51 program manager said that the Air Force was ecstatic about the event's accomplishments. The X-51 is 14 feet long and has no real wings, allowing it to withstand the shockwave created during flight.
A scramjet is an engine that has no internal moving parts, that it takes the air in, you mix fuel in it, and it automatically burns. Because of the high speed, high temperature that you get in flight, it now is able to produce a thrust.
The aircraft was launched over the Point Moreau Naval Air Warfare Center Sea Range from under the wing of a Boeing B-52 Stratofortress at 50,000 feet around 10 a.m. local time. The X-51 was then propelled by a solid rocket booster to Mach 4.8. After about 200 seconds in flight, Boeing said that something then occurred that caused the vehicle to lose acceleration, possibly due to an engine blowout. At that point, the X-51 was terminated as planned. Although it was expected to fly for about 300 seconds and reach Mach 6, the scramjet only managed Mach 5 at a height of about 70,000 feet. The aircraft then landed in the ocean as planned, however, there are no plans to retrieve it. This test is the first of 4 planned flights for the X-51 program, with the other 3 planned for this coming fall. Previously, the X-51 had flown twice but remained attached to the B-52 both times. And on this day in history, in 585 BCE, the Battle of Halys, also known as the Battle of the Eclipse, took place at the Halys River in present-day Turkey between the Medes and the Lydians. This was the final battle of a 5-year war between Hyalides II, commander of the Lydians, and Cyaxares, who commanded the Medes. The battle ended abruptly due to a total solar eclipse, which was perceived as an omen, indicating that the gods wanted the fighting to stop. Famed ancient historian Herodotus states that there were 2 reasons for the war in the first place. First, the 2 sides had clashing interests in Anatolia, but also there was a motive of revenge. The desire for revenge was over some Scythian hunters employed by the Medes who once returned empty-handed and were insulted by Cyaxares. In revenge, the hunters slaughtered one of his sons and served him to the Medes. The hunters then fled to Sardis, the capital of the Lydians. When Cyaxares asked for the Scythians to be returned to him, Hyalides refused to hand them over, so in response, the Medes invaded. According to the histories by Herodotus, quote, "When they saw that it had become night instead of day, they ceased from their fighting and were much more eager that peace should be made between them." In the aftermath, a truce was hastily arranged. As part of the terms of the agreement, Hyalides' daughter was married to Cyaxares' son, and the River Halys was declared to be the border of the two warring nations. Since the exact dates of the eclipse can be calculated, the Battle of the Eclipse is the earliest historical event of which the date is known with such precision. And those are the top headlines for Friday, May 28, 2010. This has been the Audio WikiNews Brief. To receive the latest news, please visit wikinews.org, presenting up-to-date, relevant, newsworthy, and entertaining content without bias. WikiNews is a free service and is funded by your generous donations. Click on the donate link on our homepage to learn how you can contribute. Who knows? Your contributions may go to help us pronounce the names of ancient commanders even better. This recording has been released under the Creative Commons 2.5 license.